You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Bockham as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Bockham. Thanks for being here. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we can talk through how you can work on saving your marriage. This is the Save the Marriage Podcast. And we're here because we want to focus on how to improve and save your marriage. Now, I just got back earlier. You know, it's about that time of year where you're starting to think about those income taxes and all those other financial issues. And so I had a visit with my accountant, and my accountant was showing me a balance. You know, he was showing me kind of the money in, money out, and then he showed me income versus expenses. And we went through and looked for the balance sheet. And I was sitting there with him realizing that this is one of the ways that people often live their lives in marriage. You can call it lots of things. You can call it scorekeeping, or you can call it the balance book method, or maybe tit for tat, or eye for an eye. But all of those are really about how you measure what the other person is putting into a relationship versus what you're putting into a relationship. How much am I putting in versus how much are you putting in? And often we find ourselves in this balance point of saying, you know, is it worth it? Are we on the balance? Am I getting a good return on my investment? Are we in this 50-50? Are we at this place where we are both evenly involved in this relationship? Now, that's what happens at the beginning of a relationship and often carries through the whole relationship. The problem is that over time, when there's a problem, what we begin to ask is not, what am I putting in, what are you putting in? But the question becomes, I will do this if you will do this. I won't do this if you don't do this. In other words, it begins to be a measuring stick. It's a balanced book approach of saying, you know, is everything equaling out? Now, the problem with that is that we all can get into that. I've been guilty of that. I've been guilty of stepping back and going, wow, you know, am I doing more than my fair share? Am I doing more around the house? Am I doing more to bring in income? Am I doing more to bring love to the relationship? Am I doing more? And the danger of that is that when you start asking the question, the answer is almost always going to be no, because we misjudge. That's the real problem with the scorekeeping way of approaching things, the balance book method. Now, I would go even further to say it's never even helpful, but it's particularly not helpful because it's so skewed. You see, love is about showing how you feel, not using it as a way to get what you want. Now, this whole idea of scorekeeping of a balance book comes from a model of scarcity and fear. It's not about abundance. It's about seeing that there's a limit of what's out there. Here's the problem. You can't run out of love. It's not possible for you to love and love and love and run out of it. So when we work from a scarcity model, there's not enough, so I better grab what I can to preserve what I have, then we start judging, am I getting return on my investment? Now, if you're talking with your investor, if you're talking with your financial planner, that is absolutely a crucial question, because why you have your money in a market or in a particular place is only for the return. But why are you involved in a relationship? Why are you involved in a marriage? See, I firmly believe that one of the shifts that happen that gets a marriage in trouble is at the beginning of a marriage, you say, you know what, I want to marry you to show you how I love you. But over time, that begins to shift. And the shift is to, what are you doing to love me? Instead of how can I show you my love, it's what are you doing to show me your love? What are you giving my way? Love is about showing how you feel, not using it as a way to get what you want. I want you to just kind of think about the ways we do this balance book. We do it financially by looking at how much money am I putting in? How much money are you putting in? We look at it household duties. How much do I have to do around the house versus how much is this other person doing? We look at work duties. How many hours do I have to put in at the office to get my paycheck? How many hours do I have to work on this? We do it around parenting responsibilities. Who is responsible for this child? Who is good cop, bad cop? Who? I mean, we can put it in lots of different frameworks for parenting, but we're always judging, am I doing my fair share or am I doing more than my fair share? How about the way we do it with giving little things out, right? Let's say back rubs. Sometimes a back rub's just a back rub, but a lot of times people give a back rub to get sex, right? I mean, that's a very common thing I hear of, gosh, you know, I don't even know whether to trust when I'm getting a back rub because I don't know if it's about the back rub or what I'm supposed to do after that. That's a balanced book approach. Ooh, I put in. Now what am I getting out? And this is a very common place for humans to believe. You know, I hear it in the teen years of, you know, I take them on a date and pay for their meal. So what's after that, right? And what's fair? And that begins to set us up. I remember when I was working doing premarital sessions with lots of couples, that was one of the common themes. They would come in with this idea that they were trying to find an equality in this. We're going to both share in the equally in the household expenses, they would tell me. And I would ask how that's going to play out. And they would have these long explanations of how, you know, we would evenly distribute. And I said, well, wait a minute. What happens when one of you is making a whole lot more money than the other person? Oh, well, then we'll do a percentage. But what I started to point out is somebody is still going to lose in that. Even if I have to pay a smaller percentage of my money, I still have a less amount at the outcome of that. And I remember the first time it came to me, I was sitting there working with a couple. And this man was making, you know, he's early in his career, but he was already making, I think my memory is about $200,000 a year. The woman, on the other hand, was doing more of a social service job, and she was making about $20,000 a year. And so I said, okay, so how are you guys going to do that? And he said, oh, we're going to put in evenly in order to support the household. And I looked at her and I said, how's that feel to you? And she said, well, it'll take all my money. And he said, yes, it will, but that's fair. At which point he would then be left over with approximately $180,000 in his own play money. So I said, well, it seems a little unfair. And I pointed that out. And I said, maybe you ought to think about it and come back and tell me your solution. So he came back and he said, okay, we're going to do a percentage. So I'll pay 90% and she'll pay, you know, 10%. And therefore it will be even. And so they had reduced it, and I still pointed out that he was still to the better, greater than about $150,000 over her amount that she was going to have left over. And so finally it began to dawn on them that what they were doing was playing an even investment. And I noted for them that marriage is never an even investment. It's all in. You may have heard people say, you know, marriage is not 50-50. It's 100-100. We're all in on this. We put everything we have into this to get to where we want to. That's what happens in a healthy marriage. In an unhealthy marriage, in a stressed marriage, we go back to that scarcity place. What am I getting out of this? Because I'm not putting in more than you are. The real problem with that is if there are two people both saying, I'm not putting in more than you, both will continue to back out of the relationship and put in less and less and less and less. And slowly the marriage comes to a screeching halt as both people withhold and withhold until there's no energy going into the relationship. They've done studies where they've asked couples, how much do they put in? And both people always claim to be putting in more than 50% of the weight of the responsibility of the whatever you want to judge it. Now, you notice that if you add up both people's figures, it exceeds 100%. Not possible, which tells me that both people believe they put in more than their fair share, and yet that's not possible. It's a mindset. It's a place in our head that we carry with us that we are the ones doing more. We're adding more in. There are some reasons for that. One reason is you're aware of what you put in, but you may miss what your spouse is putting in. Let me say a little bit differently. I know all the things I'm doing to show my wife how I'm loving her. I know all the actions I'm taking, all the things that I do, all the little things that I do. What I might miss is what she's doing. I notice a lot of it, but I might miss some, and I might begin to misjudge if I use that as a measuring stick. Because my actions are always visible to me. So they're the visible actions that may be compared to the invisible actions, the ones I don't notice from my spouse. There's also a difference in emphasis and a belief in what's important. When my wife and I had just been married for about 6 months, I was in my graduate school training, and you know, we'd lived together in a household for those 6 months long enough to kind of bump into each other a good bit and have some frustrations. And hers, I think, was about my level of tidiness, not cleanliness. I stayed clean. I showered and I washed and all those things. But in terms of my desk, it would be a wreck. In terms of my study area, it would be a wreck. And so I remember we were involved in a class. In this class, it was about how to do marriage enrichment events. We were actually being taught how to hold marriage enrichment events. And the way we were being taught was by doing marriage enrichment activities. So one of them was what we call the fishbowl. In a fishbowl, the spouses would be knee-to-knee in chairs, and the mediators, or the facilitators, depending on how bad things went, were also kind of knee-to-knee. And so we were in kind of a little X in the middle of the room, and surrounding us were all the other people watching the dialogue. So there we were sitting, and so I said, you know, you can pick something that you want to talk about. And so my wife naturally chose the fact that I didn't keep things as nice as she thought, and she thought that I was leaving it up to her to do, that she felt like it had been put on her to do. And as we talked, one of the things that became very clear to her is not that I wanted not to have to clean, not that I was avoiding that activity as much as it was not on my radar. It was not natural for me to notice the mess. I could walk through a disaster zone because I'm a kind of an internal person. I'm an internal processor. And so I could be in the midst of lots of chaos and not have it affect me because it was external to me. It didn't get in. And so as we were talking, she began to realize that it was not me refusing to do those things as much as me not noticing those things. Now, that's not an excuse, but it did explain to her why it was happening this way. That I didn't have an expectation that she would clean up after me, that she would, you know, be my new mother or anything of that, as what that might have felt to her like. Instead, it was a reality that my eyes did not notice those things because we had a difference in importance on those things. Now, my job was then to figure out how to start noticing, how to look around and say, wow, I have really left my corner in a mess. I've got to clean it up. Wow, there are things that are left undone. I need to notice. And so I began to work to notice and retrain myself. So her process was to understand that there was no nefarious thoughts on my mind, no attempts on getting her to do it on my mind. But for me, it was to be aware of how that could feel to her. So then we could at least have a common language to talk about that, which brings us to another reason why sometimes we don't notice these love pieces. What feels like love and loving actions actually can vary greatly from person to person. In my Save the Marriage system or in the Relationship Rescue Blueprint, I talk about a concept that's not mine. Gary Chapman wrote about love languages. Love language is the idea that we have certain ways we speak love. We have different ways of showing it. And the problem is when you put two people together, they're probably not going to have the same love language. One person might like touch and another person might like acts of service or words of appreciation or gifts. And so there are several different language types, these five love languages that we can speak and hear best. So if I'm speaking my language, but it's not my spouse's language, they may not hear the love behind it. It may not appear to be the loving actions that I'm emphasizing, that I'm trying to show, because that's not how my spouse would understand love. Think of it kind of in that idea of a foreign language. When we're trying to learn a foreign language, we're learning how to speak it, but also how to hear it. And so in a relationship, both people are trying to learn a foreign language, the other person's love language. How can I show love that's most effective? How can I notice those acts of love in my spouse and appreciate them as acts of love? And the hope is that we begin to be able to speak each other's languages much more effectively. But before that happens, you notice what that takes. That takes a willingness to say, maybe my spouse is trying to show me love. Before that happens, we have to get ourselves out of the scarcity model that the love is not out there, that there's only so much and I'm not getting what I need, in order to open ourselves to the fact that it may be that love is or was being spoken and we missed it. Now, in the midst of a marriage crisis, it may not be spoken very loudly anymore because it was not heard earlier. In fact, often that's what I see, is that people were trying to show love. It was just not being experienced by the other person. And over time, both begin to withdraw from attempting to show the love. Both people decide not to be able to speak both languages. So then we have the problem, as we are doing this balance book, that we're suddenly judging things from a very subjective place. It's not objective. My accountant could use dollar signs to be very objective. There is money coming in and there's money going out. It's an easy equation. In relationships, it's not so easy, yet we pretend to play the same game. And that's why this is a failing method. It will always go from how much am I putting in versus how much you're putting in to I'm putting in more and not getting a return. That's the breakdown of the balance book. So here's the reality. Marriage is about showing love and receiving love. We often forget that showing love is what we can control. I cannot control how my spouse is going to respond to me, how my spouse is going to try to show appreciation or love or respect or any of the other pieces. But I can control how I reach out and show love. I can control how often I'm willing to keep doing that. Let me give you just a quick example. After having a conversation with my wife about what makes her feel loved, I found out that there are some pretty basic things that I was not aware of. We both like coffee, me probably a bit more than she. And so since I'm the early bird in the family, I'm the one up early, I always took it on as kind of my responsibility to make coffee. What I discovered was my making coffee and making it the way she liked it felt very loving towards her. She felt like I was kind of taking control and taking some care of her. She felt so cared for in that moment. I never knew that. I thought it was a practical thing. But I tell you, it changed how I do coffee. Now it's an act of love, not just a practical piece. It's an act of love. And you can bet that every morning that coffee is going to be the way she wants it. And I'm going to make sure that she gets it. When we go out somewhere, she'll even let me make her coffee for her. The cream would be in front of her and the sweetener in front of her, and I'll still prepare it because it's a loving action, not because she's not capable of it, but because it makes her feel loved. We all have those little things that if we have a chance to talk about, we would begin to say, wow, that's so easy to show love. I missed that in the past. So think about that love language. Think about the fact that you can always show love and you can always figure out how to best show love by looking at how your spouse shows you love. Because here's a little secret. The way we show love is the way we understand love. Makes sense, right? That the way that you would show love is your love language. So look at how your spouse has tried to show love in the past. And if you're just trying to improve it now, look at how your spouse does it now. And that will give you some indication of what you need to do back. Let me just kind of recommend right here, The 5 Love Languages by Gary Chapman. You'll find that an incredibly enlightening book on helping you figure out how to talk the language of your spouse. Okay, back to the reality of marriage. Marriage is about being a we, which is about being all in. It's not about losing yourself. This is one of the common misperceptions people have when I say it's about being a we. They go, oh, you mean I just have to lose myself to the relationship? What about my own personality? What about my selfhood? To which I would say being a we requires two people who know themselves before they can join together. Otherwise, they just become a big blob. But in being a we bring our best to this. But we recognize that we are all in. We're in this together. Now, over and over, we have many times when we can experience whether we're going to go with we're in it together, or I, what am I getting out of this? I've told this story before, but it kind of fits here. Years ago, when my daughter was very young, toddling around, we were staying at my parents' place at the beach. It was not a big, lavish place at that time. It was a double wide with a couple of patios built on, but it served our purposes for vacation. And so while we were there, it happened that the air conditioning system went out, which at the beach on the south end of North Carolina in the middle of August can be very uncomfortable. And so we were trying to get it fixed. We were trying to get the air conditioner fixed. And so in this trailer, the filter for that system sat in the floor. It had a grate over it, a little metal grate over it. But underneath that, it was just the fiberglass filter. And so I had removed the grate to kind of look inside for the people who were coming to repair. And I happened to set it aside. At that moment, I was talking with my father, and we were discussing what was going to happen. My wife was in the other room, occupied with something else. My young daughter was toddling around. She toddled over, stepped on the fiberglass filter, which was even with the floor, so she had no idea it wasn't anything other than flooring. The fiberglass collapsed. As we noticed her whimpering, she was headed straight for the rotor blades of that air conditioning, and all that was still above was one hand trying to hold on and her foot that was stuck on the other side. That was it. I leapt and grabbed a hand. My wife leapt and grabbed her foot, and we worked her out to safety. Scared us to death. We put our child down. I turned to my wife. She turned to me and said, "How could you let her be at risk?" Notice in that moment, two things happened. First, we had been both working together perfectly. We had reacted to the situation, and then we turned on each other. We is about standing together. Whatever happens, we're in this together. And that was a lesson that I took at that moment that we have learned and worked on. Do we do it perfectly? No. But marriage is about working to being a we, which is about being all in. Not about what am I getting out. Now, notice that there is this other piece that we have to be aware of. Availability of resources by one or the other can vary from time to time for lots of reasons. Years ago when I was sick, I was very sick. And so sick that I basically struggled to work part of a day at work and to come home exhausted and lie on the couch. My stubbornness kept me going to work, but it couldn't carry me through the rest of the day. I could not help as much as I needed to in the house. My wife had to pick up the pieces. When my wife was sick at another time and had to have surgery, she was not available for that. But notice that those are clear examples. There are other moments when maybe somebody is feeling a little bit depressed or sad or anxious or some other place of being a little less available. We are not always equally available. Our resources are not always equally available. And there's some times when we have to realize that marriage is not about going, this is 50-50, because the other person is not capable of putting that in because of what's going on in their life at that time. That's just being able to say, I'm going to be in 100%. Whatever needs to be done, we will do it together without trying to keep score, without trying to figure out who put in what. Also, you need to remember that perception is not reality. I don't always perceive things accurately on what I'm putting in versus what my wife is putting in. We do not ever have a clear idea of reality. So we have to say, okay, maybe I'm misreading this. Maybe I need not to use this as my measuring stick, because if I do, I'm always going to hold my spouse as being less than what I'm doing. And that might be very inaccurate. So focus on abundance of what you can show, how you can demonstrate your love. Think about how you can always have control over that. One of my former coaches, Paul, said that his marriage changed when he shifted from what am I getting simply to what can I put in? What can I give? How can I move back into this relationship? And what I've noticed is that when marriages are in trouble, both people are saying, what am I getting? What am I getting out of this? Why am I not getting more out of it? And suddenly, if you change it, what can I put in? It can transform the relationship. This is not about never getting your needs met, but we often get stuck in waiting for something from the other person before we act. We sit there and we judge and we wait and wait. And if that happens, then neither person is going to step up. Choose to act, not to wait, not to be passive saying, you know, if you do, I will, which is kind of like saying in the balance book, I'm going to wait until your side either equals or exceeds mine before I do anything. And yet we've already established that's probably a misperception. One of the things that I've noticed is that more marriages end in a Cold War freeze than the heated war, that there are no longer skirmishes between the two. That what's really happening is each person has kind of aimed at the other person and said, you shoot, I'll shoot. But behind that is, if you love, I'll love. If you care, I'll care. If you're warm, I'll be warm. If you forgive, I'll forgive. If you do, I'll do. The problem is when two people are both doing that, it looks like a Cold War that is stuck, that is frozen in place. That's what cripples most marriages. The heated war is often long over because even in a heated war, at least the couple feels connected, that there's something going on between them. When the Cold War comes is when it gets tough. There might be some small skirmishes here and there as somebody steps over a boundary and the other person shoots back. But in all of the marriages that I see in trouble, probably 90% are at the Cold War freeze. They're aimed at each other, but they're no longer heated. That's when you know that you've gotten to the balanced book approach that's broken down. You're always asking, when are you going to change? Because then I'll do some changing. But not until then. I'm not going to make this unfair. Remember that choices are made by both your action and your inaction. When I was a boy, my father went away for a conference, and he came back and he handed me paperweight on my desk. And the paperweight had a quote on it that said, not to decide is to decide. To not take action is to take action. Just like not deciding, as things move on, the decision begins to be made. When you take no action, the action is chosen anyway. So choosing to do nothing is choosing an approach that you're going to take, but you know the expected outcome when you do that. Let me even offer for you to step away from the balance book, to give up on the tit for tat, eye for an eye, to give up on scorekeeping, recognizing that you're not likely to see the proper way a score should be kept, and decide that you're going to act in loving ways, that you're going to work from a level of abundance, that you can always show more love, and see if that changes the Cold War. See if it begins to bring about more peace. See if it brings about the possibility of reconnection and action. I wish you the best. This is Lee Balcom, wishing you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.